grease, steel, cracked iron, and bayou grass. Sun's heading creekside, days fading fast. Are you really digging for peace, or is that just a lie you tell to help you sleep? Sure that you really want.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all, or presumably still y'all, all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. It's been I'm a little tired. I'm always a little tired. Actually been a pretty good day. Got up, went to the gym this morning, smashed a workout. Feel so much better. Had a tuna fish sandwich. That's always a comfort. It's rare I just sit down and eat a sandwich anymore. And I had a tuna fish sandwich. And that was, it's carried me through most of the day. Made me feel pretty good. I had a little protein bar before I came out here to film this. Been evaluating a lot of things. First and foremost, welcome to season 3. You guys caught last week's episode. Hope so. I have a small retraction to make. I didn't know I was telling that story, and found out as a result after Rachel watched the episode that she was the one that planned the Robin Trower trip. That was her deal. It wasn't Pop. Rachel was the one planning the Robin Trower trip because she knew her dad liked Robin Trower. So I just wanted to clear that up. She also told me some other stuff that I didn't know. She told me that long before her and I were even a conceptual thing, I was her dad's favorite local guy. I was the comic he liked watching the most, and I didn't know that. He saw me host for Jimmy Schubert. I think the first time he saw me, who was honestly one of my favorite acts I ever got to work with. And I ended up working with Shub a number of times. But that made me feel good. And she actually showed me a text message where he said some nice things about me in later years. And it, I was glad to receive that. I had those of you guys that follow me and kind of keep up know that last week I went up to Chicago and did a show. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And then also this week, right when I got back, I had to hop back in the car Wednesday. I'm losing track of my days. It's Saturday here. I spent all day writing this. Thank God I wrote down the day. Wednesday. I hope my audio sounds good. I got some new mics, man. I got these really nice, these little DJI mini mics that was and a new hookup for my camera, and hoping it gets the audio even cleaner. You know, we can just keep making this thing better for everybody, especially listeners. Anyways, Wednesday I had to get in the car and head up to Kilgore. Well, not to Kilgore. I actually was heading up to Gladewater, Texas. I'm doing some shows in Gladewater. Towards the end of September, I'm doing 2 shows in Gladewater at Jackson's Theater. And I needed to go out to Rome, Texas, see my buddy William Lee Martin, formerly the artist formerly known as Cowboy Bill. I was going out to see him. He's got a new podcast called the Red Dirt Comedy Podcast, and he's building a whole new brand out there. And I went out there and did his podcast on Thursday. So Wednesday, I drove up to Gladewater to do Jackson, the guy who owns the theater, to do his podcast and record some promo for those shows coming up there. We can try to sell some tickets. I don't get to East Texas very often, and there's a number of conflicting reasons for that. One is not a lot of venues. 2 is it's been hard to go up there. It's hard to go back. I have a lot of conflicting feelings about it. And something has changed in me because it wasn't as hard this time. And I suspect it's the work we've done here on the podcast and the work I've done with Adam writing the book has taken some of the sting away, maybe. I made it a point, as I do most times when I drive through East Texas, to wind my way down Sexton Road and look at what's left of the wrecking yard. Now, I have a cousin that owns it now. I didn't want to bother him. It was the middle of the day. I figured he'd probably be at work day. So I was trying to respect his privacy. But I made a little video, and I'm going to put it at the end of this podcast, and you can stick around after the closing and watch that if you'd like. If you've ever been curious, I know there's a lot of y'all are listeners, but if you get the opportunity, hop over to YouTube, fast forward to the end of this episode, and you can watch the video too. It's a little video. For any of you who have ever wondered, you know, like what that little road. I got to the top of Sexton Road, and I was coming into Lever's Chapel, and I just held my camera up behind the dash on my phone and narrated it for Adam so he could see really like that road I used to ride my bicycle down and where the cattle pond was. And a lot of it's gone and a lot of it's overgrown. The trees are much bigger now. I told him, you know, about how when you got to the top of that road, you used to be able to look down, you'd see the whole wrecking yard, all the cars and lined up, and it was kind of a beautiful thing to me as a kid, and I wish I had photos of it. Papa used to like take me up there in the golf cart at the top of that hill and turn around and just look at it, look through his binoculars at it. Nobody ever thought to take no photos of it. Of course, photos were a different thing altogether back then. But I shot this little video, and coming down, I realized I could see Uncle Bobby's old house and the road to Granny's. And then I got to the main road in the wrecking yard, which was right beside where my childhood home was before it was burnt down. And you can see Papa's shop back there. And I pulled over on the side of Sexton Road, and I spent a few minutes there. I've seen it as an adult. I've been back, even last year I went back, drove by, looked at it for a minute, you know. But something was different in me this time. The place just looks so small. I don't know if I've finally outgrown it. I don't know what that means. It just looked really small. It was shocking to me. That shop that always looked so huge in my mind. That piece of land that I played on as a boy. You can't even tell, but like right there by where that house was, there was a pump jack on the hill. And I would play in that backyard, and the soundtrack was always, you know, that kind of quiet squealing coming from that pump jack. Pump jack's gone. House is gone. A lot more trees. There's another house there that belongs to my cousin. I kept it out of the photos because, you know, that's his place. It was shocking. I've been kind of processing it. It's been a week of memories, and I spent some time trying to process what that means. And I'm not there yet. I'm not there. I know. It mostly just made me sad, which is a marked change, because when I used to get to that place on Sexton Road, I had all this anger. Just furious anger about everything that's gone down and everything that went wrong out there. And somewhere along the way, I fixed the anger. The anger's gone. Or, you know, But what is left that I didn't know was underneath that anger is a great deal of sadness. And I'm a little surprised. I'm a little surprised at how immensely sad I was driving away. That's when I wrote the words to the new theme song. Anyways, that video will be at the end if you guys want to check it out. If not, that's all right too, you know. But I just, you know, I try to be real with you guys, and like, you know, sometimes I give advice, and I don't want you to think I don't struggle or still struggle with some of this stuff. I struggle with it all the time. And I am grappling with the difference in my feelings this time and going back home. After that, I went off into Kilgore. I was either going to go to the Charbroil and get me a burger. I was going to go to TJ's Cafe, if it's even still there, or maybe it's called the Circle Cafe. Places I've been a lot. Charbroil was a family institution. I've been going there since Charlene worked there from up the road. So I went on to the Charbroil by myself. Of course, there's nobody there that would know me now. But I had a nice lunch. I sat there. I had my little Charbroil burger. It was just as good as I remembered it. Nothing, you know, I wouldn't say it's the best burger I ever had, but it's a damn good hamburger. And I just listened to the conversations. People watched a little bit. Thinking about the places I'm from and the cadence of that. I drove on into Gladewater and did Jackson's Pot. Had a tour of the theater. I'm really excited. It's a really cool theater. It's a really cool thing he's put together. Did find out it was a porn theater in the 70s for a brief minute in time. It's where they showed Debbie Does Dallas. And my immediate next question to Jackson was, have you cleaned the floors? And he's like, oh God, yes. But it's a nice theater. I'm really excited about it. He's got an incredible bar. He's like a legit bar guy, bourbon guy. Had a sour mash with him called Mickles, I think. And one of the better sour mashes I've ever had. We had a nice time on his podcast. 2.5 hours. Just beat it up. Talked about everything. I said some disparaging stuff about Jim Gaffigan, but it was all true. Shouldn't have a bourbon in my hand on a podcast. I got done with Jackson. I drove over to Tyler to see my cousin Ricky, who y'all have heard me talk about a lot. And I don't get to see him in person very often. I'd never met his wife, and so I drove over and visited with them at their house for a little bit, and that was a nice visit. And it was fun seeing Ricky in the flesh, because even the way he sits in his chair reminds me of his dad. He's very reminiscent of my Uncle Ronnie, who I've not seen in many years. But it was like, for a little bit there, it was kind of like sitting there with my Uncle Ronnie, you know. Like, I was like, oh, man, you kind of got that vibe about you, even the way you sit in the chair. And I don't know, some people just carry some people's mannerisms, you know, and you can see it written on them like legacy. And my cousin Ricky has got his dad written on him like legacy and mannerisms, and he's a good dude. I drove out to Rome, Texas, which, my God, I'm not sure I hate anything as much as I hate the city of Dallas, and not the people that live there. I have a number of good friends who live in Dallas. It's no indictment on the fine folks of Dallas, but that city in general, trying to drive through it, is just it's the flying spaghetti monster created their their freeway system. 8 freeway changes just to drive through that city, only to find out 35 is once again under construction, and now I got paid $12 in tolls to get on the world's scariest express lane. Try to get my ass through to get to Fort Worth. Should have just stayed on 20 and just stayed on 20 until I got over closer to Fort Worth, jumped up 287 or something. I won't make that mistake again. I got to Rome, spent the night at my buddy Bill's house. We had a drink and bullshit, catch up on craft, stuff like that. Talk shop. And did his podcast the next morning for a hurried on back to Houston because my kid did have a singing performance last night and I wanted to be here in time to go do that, but still get podcast stuff done, all that kind of good thing. It was good. So I'm just outside of grappling with some big things that I'm sure will pass in time. I'm not boo-hooing in the corner type stuff. I broke down in tears a little bit talking to my wife about it because I was trying to get to the root of what I was feeling, but I'm okay for the most part. So that's nothing too concerning. Let's do a quick little sponsor copy here. This season of The Wrecking Yard is brought to you by absolutely nobody. Sponsor free. Just black coffee, stubbornness, and a loud old temporary, whatever you call it, portable air conditioner. But hey, if you're a brand, a business, or a rich uncle with a guilty conscience, there's room at the table. Slide in, sponsor the yard, and remember, all ships rise. It's been a whirlwind of a week, like I said. Church. But I'm really excited to be here with y'all. I'm excited about this episode because it all just sort of fell together, and I'm excited to talk to you guys about Chicago and my experiences there. I've been on a journey this whole week. This whole week I've been on a journey, and I'm just dying to share it. First, I got to take you back to a 20-year-old me that decided to move to Milwaukee, Wisconsin in 1997. My day wonders know the lore. They've heard the stories, but they ain't heard this one. This one takes place in December of 1997. If you lived in the Midwest in 1997, you know it was a good year for snow. It's also my very first year up in the Midwest. And as a young man who still had not become accustomed to driving on snow, it was a little bit of a difficult transition. You might also know, I've talked a little bit, I was dating a gal in Ohio. She lived over in Westlake. This particular story takes place right after she broke up with me. Right after. The little gal in Ohio had broke up with me, and I was the saddest boy that ever lived. That's as sad as you can be in your 20s. You know, you just don't know what sad is yet. You don't know. I wasn't in love with a girl. She wasn't in love with me. We had chemicals that were liking each other, you know, but neither one of us had a clue what love is or what it's supposed to be or how love maths out. We didn't know. You know, but it felt big at the time. It felt huge at the time. And to top it off, she had split with me to get back together with this weasel of a human being that she dated before me. The kind of dude that's like always riding in his girlfriend's car because his car is busy not existing. He had just quit every job he had because they didn't recognize his mad skills. That guy, I don't take no guff off foreman guy. And combined with that, made me feel lower than mouse piss. You can let the wrong women do that to you. And I suspect most of us have at some point. Or if you're a lady, maybe it's the wrong dude. Or maybe it's the wrong, it don't matter. I suspect some of us have let a romantic partner make us feel worse than we should have at some point. Now, at the time, I would drive from Milwaukee to southeast Chicago and perform material inspections at a couple foundries. I don't think most of them exist anymore. I believe the one in this story was called Chicago Castings or something like that. Chicago Castings, CCMD, something like that. I don't think it exists anymore. There's another one named Talcott I used to go to, but I don't think it... I don't. From what I can tell on the map, don't none of them seem to be there no more. But about once a week, that was part of my job. That was my little thing I was doing at the time, working for Longview Inspection there in Milwaukee, and I'd go to Cuyahoga Falls, however you say that, in Ohio, and there was a little manufacturing facility there. And I would do random mag particle inspections on finished parts, and it was about 6-7 hour drive, Milwaukee, get out there. Go early in the morning, go out there and do my inspections. Get off work about 5 or 6. And then I drive over to Westlake and visit with my gal. They let me stay in a motel on the company card. I'd leave there, I'd go to LaPorte, and there's a facility there. I'd go there the next day and I'd do inspections and mag particle testing. And then the following day, I'd stop in Chicago, southeast Chicago, for 2 nights in some shitty motel they used to put us up in and over in South Deering, and do inspections at foundries on cast parts before heading back to Brookfield to turn in my reports and my pay sheets for the week. I didn't have any friends in Milwaukee yet. Aside from the few folks that I knew at work, you know, I just didn't have any buddies yet. I'd spent most of my time there. I'd only been there a month or so, and I'd spent most of my time there driving back between Ohio to see this old gal whenever I had free time. So I hadn't made no roots in Milwaukee yet. I hadn't met old Charles and got the floor mopped with me behind the neighborhood bar yet. I was driving that old 3/4 ton Dodge I had, that old 1981 or whatever it was, 3/4 ton Dodge, 2-wheel drive pickup. That thing was, they had fixed it for me. Those cops had fixed it for me when I got jumped that time. And it lasted a long time after they fixed it. They'd put some lock thread or something, Loctite on bolts. But it wasn't long before it rattled that Loctite loose and started dropping that daggum starter again. And that was a problem with that truck until I got rid of the 750. These are cold trips, man. I mean, I had a big old heavy jacket, you know, that somebody gave me as a gift before I left for Milwaukee. I think my dad. Big old heavy jacket, hooded parka type thing, and had some good gloves. And Joey's mom, Miss Roebuck, Sherry, and Sharon Roebuck had made me some wool socks. She had knitted me up some wool socks. And these things, boy, wool socks is the truth in cold weather. I wore them every time. I wore holes in them wool socks. This particular trip, I drove on out there and done the inspections in Cuyahoga Falls. And then I went out to Westlake, where she had been acting kind of weird on the phone about a week or so. When I got out to Westlake, I was met with a little bit of a cold reception. And we went hung out in the pickup for a while. That's where she dropped the news on me. She was getting back together with her ex. Boy, I was so mad. I couldn't even stand to be in the same state as her. I didn't even get a hotel room. I just drove straight on to LaPorte, Indiana. That night, just drove straight on through, man. Just the hell with you. Get me the hell out of Ohio. I was driving to LaPorte listening to Delilah on the radio, mopping tears out of my eyes. In fact, that is the very trip. That's actually when I started smoking cigarettes. This is how stupid this is. She hated smokers, and I thought, by God, I'll show you. I smoked a whole pack of Doral Lights on the way back. Taught her a lesson by giving myself a 20-year-old addiction that affected every facet of my health. Showed her. Who won that one? Still her. Finished up, I did the job in LaPorte. Went on to Chicago. Checked in my motel over in Deering. Snowing like some 50. Snow everywhere, man. I was having so much hell keeping that truck on the road. Next day, I was over there at the foundry with the QC, at the QC department, and there's one of these QC hands in that foundry was a young dude like me. The rest of them's older dudes, but this one guy was about my age, maybe a little older than me. I think he was 22, 23 at the time. He's giving me shit all day, man. You look sad, dog. Dog, why you look so sad, man? Looks like somebody stole your puppy. Just jackaled me. And finally, I had just about enough of it. I just told him what happened, man. I told him and them old men, fully expecting more ball busting and ridicule, but that wasn't the case. He got real serious. He's like, no, dog. You going out tonight. We're going to fix that shit. We're going to take you out on Chicago. I said, all right, man. He said, I'll call you. Go home, get dressed, get ready. I'll call you. I'll tell you where to meet us. Well, I went back to that motel, took a shower, put on my best Mobetta button up. It was hot pink, had like lightning flashes on it. Cowboy boots, tightest jeans, my favorite cowboy hat, my big buckle. He calls my cell, tells me how to get where they are. And it's kind of like over on the north side. I think it's called North Near Side or some shit like that. It's this weird, it's just like south of Lincoln Park area. I can't remember the street it was on. But it's a club, and it's called Crowbar. Not like spelled like regular Crowbar, but like C-R-O-B-A-R. Crowbar. If I remember right, it was just a little ways south of Lincoln Park. I was not dressed for Crowbar. I was not ready for Crowbar, I found out when I got to Crowbar. Crowbar was kind of a dance. I don't know what you call it. It was not the type of place I had been exposed to yet in my young life. That's what I call it. And I come walking up to the door to meet them in my hat and boots. They all had like rave goals. They all hit the deck, bro. The doorman was so intrigued by my get up that when he saw Texas on my driver's license, he stopped worrying about my age. I was underage at the time. And he just lost his mind. He's like, oh shit, homie just rode his horse from Texas. You know, like he was so intrigued. He lets me on in through the door with my friends. And I was honestly thinking about leaving. I was embarrassed as hell. But damn it, if old QC guy, his name was Terry. Terry didn't convince me to stay. And I think more for bragging rights for dragging the cowboy to the bar than anything else. Because we get in there, it's like dark and pulsing lights, and there's girls dancing in cages, and they didn't bring much to wear in them cages. And I don't know what kind of music you'd call it, like maybe house or techno, but it was lots of big bass and electronic sounds. And the DJ would holler something I didn't understand every once in a while, and everybody would answer him, and then they'd just, the beat would come back, and I was indeed the only cowboy hat in the place, and my bright pink Mobetta lightning shirt wasn't to turn any attention. I felt like a zoo exhibit walking through. Me staring at them staring at me. Terry had a big group of friends. He introduced me to this kind of this slender blonde-headed girl. She had long blonde hair, and she had a jewel nose piercing. And she was wearing what looked like some Victoria's Secret lingerie with a skirt and combat boots. And she was going to the University of Chicago to be a biochemist or some shit like that. She told me her name was Rain. I don't know if she's telling me the truth. Probably not. Maybe so. I don't know that I was that concerned with whether she was telling me the truth. She was from South Dakota. She liked my cowboy hat. She kept telling me that I made her feel like home. And they brought shots from the bar, and they all consumed them with glee, me choking most of mine down because I wasn't much of a drinker yet, and trying to grimace my way through it because Rain took her shot like it was a drink of water. And me and her were chatting a little bit as much as we could with the music going. And she pulls a little bag out of her little carry bag, and she pulls out these two little pills, little white pills that got tulips on them. And she gives me one, and they bring another set of shots, and we take these pills. Boy, it ain't that long. If 20, 30 minutes, the music starts sounding real good to me. I'm thrusting my belt buckle and jerking my body in ways that what felt good but completely foreign to me. I got a little queasy though. I remember I started getting a little queasy, and I had to work my way through the crowd to the bathroom, and by the time I got to the bathroom, I was in kind of rough shape. I felt like I was about to lose my guts. And I yanked the door of a stall open to find two fellas enjoying each other's company who weren't fans of the intrusion. And I slammed that door back and got to the next stall. And my mind was still reeling from what I'd just seen. And I puked all of that neon yellow alcohol I had consumed, whatever it was, that night. I got rid of all that. I cleaned myself up as quick as I could. Shouted a quick apology to the two-man party. I broke up in stall one and made my way back to the table. Well, I'm reeling a little bit now. That music sounds real good, right? That music, all of a sudden, that's my favorite music in the world. Another round of shots come and go, and Rain's wearing my cowboy hat and kissing me. And we're having fun. I don't know if you'd call what I was doing dancing, but I thought I was dancing. Somehow a number of hours go by, and the lights are on, and we're all just piling out of the club in various states of disorientation. It's got to be 3:00 in the morning. I don't know. Rain's riding with her friends that I don't remember meeting, but I think I did. But she wrote her number on a club napkin, and she told me to call her when I get back to Chicago. I told her I come to Chicago about once a week. And I walked that old Dodge in the snow, grinning. It's been a pretty good night. And as I'm walking up on that Dodge, I notice that old starter's hanging out from the cross member. And damn if I hadn't kicked that damn starter loose again. And my mechanical skills were a bit impaired at the moment. They were off duty. And the world was spinning a little bit. And I just crawled in that cab and got under my big, locked the doors and got under my big parka and put that hood over me and passed out there in the seat. I woke up early, just a little bit of sun like coming through the windshield. Sun was just rising. Head was pounding like somebody hit me with a hammer. I had a pack of Doral lights in my hand that I'd never gotten to smoking. They had her number tucked in the cellophane.
I couldn't help but grin in spite of how shitty I felt. Climbed under the truck in the snow and the ice and the water and put that stupid starter back in. Got that truck fired up. Just got back to the motel just time enough to change and run my ass back over the foundry. I don't remember much of that shift. I was having a hard time to maintain that day. I just remember a couple times I walked up old Terry telling everybody about Cowboy Jerry showing up to the dance club, and they were all getting a kick out of it. And he seemed to recall more of my adventures in dancing than I had. I drove on back to Milwaukee at night. And I didn't notice till I got back to Milwaukee and I started fumbling around and realized I'd lost that number. I'd lost that napkin. Had that girl's number on it. I was a little despondent, but not much. My head was still pounding from either that pill or those shots that we'd done. And all I really wanted to do was sleep through the weekend and recover from that. And I'd come to the conclusion that maybe Girls Like Rain was a little faster speed than I was ready for yet. But I did stop worrying about that other gal, though. I started having fun in Milwaukee after that and started making friends and went on to have many an adventure in Milwaukee. Did make any more friends like Rain, and I can't help but wonder if she's ever been doing biochemistry somewhere or whatever the hell she ended up doing, and wondered about the free-spirited, naive Texan she met one night who never called her back. Probably not, but it makes me laugh to think about it sometimes. You think about all the folks you've met in life that you spent a few hours with and never seen again. They all got some brief memory of you, mostly. There's little echoes of you from throughout your life all across the world, all these people. All these people who ever met you, they have this little echo of you, this little brief memory. Whether you spent a few hours with somebody, train ride, whatever, if they glance it, they have some brief little something in their brain, some little cataloged piece of you. It's not 1997, though. It is 2025, and I have left a lot of echoes on my journey since then. I got echoes all over the world. A few months back, Rachel found out that my editor, Adam, was having a launch party for his new book, More Hell. It's a collection of short stories he's written over the years. And they were going to launch it. They were going to do a book launch party for him at a local bookstore there in Rockford, Illinois, where he resides. And she cooked up the idea. She said, what if we fly you up there to surprise him and support him like he's done for us, because he's been nothing but supportive since we began working for him. Adam has become my friend, and he's just working on this. And I was like, that's a cool idea. How cool is that? We can hide it under the guise of I'm going to perform for some corporate event. But then we decide, why not? I don't get to get up there very often. Let's throw a public show the night after his launch party in the area. And we'll cover me not being able to be there for his thing by saying that Junie has a performance at night on Friday, the night of his book launch, and I'm just going to fly in for Saturday and do this gig. But I hope he'll come out to the show. We sent him and his wife some tickets. Love to meet you guys. And Rachel conspired with his wife, Lauren, who's a wonderful lady, to pull this all off, because we knew we'd need some inside help. And luckily for us, this fellow named Mike Zimmerman popped up. He said, I have a venue, but it's a little strange. It's a little different, but he's a comedy fan. And he's a fan of mine. And he says, man, tells Rachel, he goes, I've got this indoor sports center, and we could set up a show right there in the basketball court. And him and Rachel put this show together And he gets, he's worked in the music industry for years and knows all kind of people. And he gets lighting out there and gets chairs out there. And by God, we put us a show together. We start selling tickets to this thing. Started trying to find an opener in the Chicago area on short notice. And there's just everybody I watched was just so dirty. And I just, that's not really the lane I'm in these days. I like people just be able to come out and enjoy my show. And people are either real dirty or real political. And I just, I don't want a lot of that on my show. I want people to come forget all that kind of shit and just have a good time. And I thought, you know, I didn't get to tour up there at all when I was getting ready to film The Wrecking Yard, the first special in 2021. And those people, you know, you can watch something on video. Stand up on video is just that. I don't care how good the special's made. I don't care how good the special's directed. Watching somebody's comedy special does not at all encompass the same feelings as watching something live, as seeing the live performance. And I come up with the idea that instead of having an opener, I'll just go up and do a condensed version of The Wrecking Yard, the special, and then transition and do my whole Tipping Point special that I'm working on now for those people. Just if they're going to drive out to Crystal Lake, see me in a basketball court, by God, they're going to get a show. They're going to get all the show they paid for and then some. And I never done anything like that before. I usually like to work with an opener or something like that, but I just decided, hell, we're going to do something different. Now, Adam's much more of my editor. He's become my friend. I ain't got a lot of people in my close circle, but he has made his way into my close circle. We've made our ways into each other's circle, and working on this book, we've been combing through my life. He knows so many stories now that ain't even in The Wrecking Yard. Stories I didn't tell y'all. Some stories that were just too painful. Some stories that at the time I forgot about them. But, you know, going through this book and working on stuff, I remembered things I forgot. He's good at prodding me to get back down to the details of stuff. And that's just kind of like what working on this book has been like. We just go back and forth, and we usually meet on Fridays, and he asks me questions about things, and sometimes I tell him stories he don't know. And I'm also fascinated with him too, but it's kind of disarming because he's watched the podcast and he knows a great deal of my life, like a lot of you, and he'll say stuff that throws me off sometimes, you know. He'll say stuff to Rachel that throws her off because he knows so much about me and her from watching the podcast. But I'm also fascinated with him because he's a bit of an adventurer too, and he has some great stories of his own. And he's about 12 years younger than me, which is the same age that I was younger than Uncle Bobby, and that feels like kismet or some kind of weird thing. We bonded right off the bat, I think. I really like Adam, and I trust him with my story, which if you've ever written anything or created anything, it's a very hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to give up some of that trust. And I was really excited to meet him in person. So I get up Friday morning. I get up like a dummy. I get up at like, my flight's at 5 a.m. So I'm like, oh, I need to be there 2 hours before flight, get through security at Houston Intercontinental. So I get up at 2:30 in the morning. And I packed my bag the night before, grabbed my bag, kissed my wife goodbye, and catch an Uber to the airport. My Uber driver is a fella named Bruce in an F-150, and Bruce from Tascosa. And Bruce, by God, is going to talk to me about everything. We talked about gambling in Texas and why it ought to be, and why there ought to be marijuanas in Texas, and why it ain't hurting nobody. And Bruce is just a cool dude. And Bruce has spent a good number of his years when he's younger welding over there at the Browning Root. And Bruce starts telling me welding stories from the 70s, and I tell him some x-ray stories from the 90s. And
we start talking about old places in Houston. He brings up the area around the Secret Group Comedy Club. He goes, I don't know if you ever heard of that place. They tell jokes in there, which made me laugh out loud in spite of myself. I said, no, I'll have to check it out sometime, Bruce. Get in there and find out TSA don't come to work till 4 a.m. So I had to just sit in the airport lobby area where you check in for about an hour and wait for TSA to show up. And then I go through there, and I don't know which doctor I made mad at what point in my life, but there's something in my body, somewhere in my groin area, that sets them damn scanners off every time. Every time. I have never walked through an airport unmolested. I get groped every time. Every time. And that dude was such a rude prick that morning. They don't make you take your shoes off anymore. But I went through the scanner. My groin beeps. He's got to do the search. He was nice about that part. He's this little ginger-headed, little kind of weaselly-faced little dude. But he's nice up until that point. Says, I need you to take your shoes off. And the lady that's over on the other side says, what line did you come through? And I pointed to the line I came through where my stuff was being x-rayed. And then he had me turn around so he could do the search and grope and all that good stuff. And he gets done with it and he goes, all right, you're good to go. And I said, but he had turned me around. I turned back around. My shoes were gone. I go, hey, man, where's my shoes? But I said it real nice. Where's my shoes, bud? I had taken a gummy while I was in the Uber. I was already had a softened view on humanity at that point. I didn't even mind the extra attention, you know? Say, man, where's my shoes? He goes, going through the x-ray. That's why she asked you which lane you were in. Like, just real shitty, you know? But he couldn't mess with my joy. I go, oh, well, you spun me around, so I had no idea what the hell she meant or where my shoes went, bro. I thought you was doing magic. And he muttered something and walked off, and I went over there, waited for my shoes, got through. Got on my United flight to find out I had a whole row to myself. That rarely happens. Those are days of rare air, especially on a morning flight, United. Had the whole row to myself. I settled into, I started rereading my Faulkner novels, and so I settled into Sartorius and read that on the flight into Chicago, read a good deal of it. And get to Chicago, go through about 15 different shuttles and such until I get to my rent-a-car location, which is a little off base. And guy tells me, he says, man, you're going to have to pay extra because you're picking the car up early. The car was set for 11 a.m. I said, how much is it? It's $27. Yeah, I just put it on my card. So he puts that deposit on my card. And I keep seeing this thing is get you a toll tag, the unlimited toll tag. And I said, man, is this worth getting? He's like, oh, yeah, everything around here is toll roads. And I remember that from my young years living there, you know. I said, well, hell, man, how much that thing costs? Like $56 a day or something. I said, man, I ain't know about that. He goes, look, dude, I'm just going to take it out there and put it in the car. Make sure after you drive out of the lot, you stick it to the Velcro on the windshield. You'll be covered. Rental car guy does me a solid. Saves me a little money. I say, shit. Boy, Chicago's feeling good already. Midwest feeling good. I jump in a rented little Chevy Trax. Man, I just enjoyed the shit out of that little car. A little underpowered, but I mean, thing can get up and do triple digits on the highway and drove like a charm. I mean, just handled really well, had comfortable seats. I give the radio a 3 out of 10. The speakers are kind of rattly and kind of going through a phase. I've been listening to a lot of older Bubba Sparks and older Slim American stuff, some older Yellow Wolf stuff, and I was wanting to jam, and it was hard to jam in that car. Started looking for some food. So, man, I'm going to find me some diner-style breakfast, something like that. I see this place come up my map in Elgin. It's called the Skillet Breakfast. I said, boy, it sounds like my speed. And I pulled off the highway there in Elgin. I went and got me a skillet breakfast. My God, I was not ready for Midwest portions. They brought a skillet out chock full of hash browns and ham and bacon and maybe some sausage and cheese, and it was a masterpiece. Boy, let me tell you something, 20-year-old me would have jacked it up, but boy, 48-year-old me don't eat like that anymore. We didn't get very far into that. We struggled with that a little bit. That meal beat me. I got about a third of the way through. I said, boy, I'm done with this. I can't do no further. The waitress sort of smirked at me when she picked it up. Get on into Rockford, check into my hotel real quick. I've texted Adam's wife. She's telling me he's down at the bookstore down there downtown, getting ready for the book launch party. And he likes to linger down there, so he'd probably be down there a while. So I hop in the car, I map out that it's about 20 minutes from my hotel, and I run off in downtown Rockford to Mays Books. And right before I get there, I'm on the phone with my wife. We're planning how I'm going to surprise Adam, because I'm going to video it so Rachel can see too and Lauren can see. And right before I get there, Lauren texts me. She said, oh, he's left the bookshop. So I called him, lied to him, told him I was going to come meet him at the Wired Cafe for lunch. It's all right. She says, right down the street from the bookstore. Well, I'd already parked the car. I said, man, I'll go find him. Told Rachel, wish me luck. We'll go find her boy. Now, when I was driving in, when I turned into downtown Rockford, turned down the street, I don't remember what street Mays Books is on, but the main drag there. When I turned on the main drag, there's an empty parking lot, kind of a gravel parking lot over here, some trees and stuff going around the sidewalk. And there's a dude that I just see for a brief second, and he's walking by, and he's kind of got his hands going like this. Like some sort of jazz poet, Joe Cocker type dude. And he's got long black hair. And I think for a minute, I go, man, that kind of looks like Adam. I've only seen a picture of the dude, but and I've done a Zoom call with him. I said, man, that kind of looks like Adam. But then he wandered off behind the building. I thought, well, maybe, I mean, I don't know what kind of drug problems Rockford has. Maybe it's just a random dude communing with nature, trying to get through his day. I said, I bet that wasn't him. So I jump out of the car, get my camera ready. I go down there at the Wired Cafe, and I start the camera. And I got my aviator sunglasses on, and, you know, I've known this for a long time about myself. I sort of look like a cop. The drug dealers didn't like me coming over because they just always thought I looked like a cop. And when I got them aviators on, it probably a little worse. It looks a little state troopery aside from the size of me. I turned that camera on me, and I yanked the door to that cafe open. And when I yanked the door to the cafe, most of the folks in the cafe at that time seemed to be 20-something to middle-aged black folks. And they all immediately turned and looked at me, and I realized that I look like a cop and immediately shut the door and backed out of the cafe. I was like, oh, bro, I think these folks are going to think I'm Law. I'm Johnny Law looking for somebody or something. About that time, I glanced down the street back to where that open parking lot was passed, and I see the young man with the black hair walking around again, except now he's going the other way. I said, man, that's got to be him. So I go down there, and I, like, real sly, bro, I peek around the side of the building, and I see Adam. He turns around, and he's walking back now. Now I know it's him. I got a good look at his face. I'm like, oh, that's definitely him. So here's what I do is I back up. I know he's coming back around. He's clearly pacing back and forth. I turned my camera on, and I got kind of hid myself behind a little tree and waited for him to come walking by me, and I was going to have that. I was looking at him in the camera so I could see him. When he got close enough, I was going to start that camera. Well, he kept walking up. He didn't even notice me. He was doing his jazz poet, his Joe Cocker thing. And he was clearly talking to himself. And I noticed he didn't notice me, and he walked right on by me like he's going out the curbside to start the camera and turn around and give it, hey, man. And I knew he recognized me from my voice before he turned around. And this was the best thing about it. He turned around. Me and Rachel watched this video a couple times. He turns around and immediately his arms burst open to hug me. And he's like, "God dang, man." You know, and he's just, Adam's just as country as a fella could be. The way he speaks and everything, he sounds real country to me. It just throws his arms open. And Adam is, he's half Egyptian and half Illinois farmer. And kind of dark complected. And he's got a big old open smile and glasses. And he just turns around, throws his arms open and hugs me. He's like, "What the?" Like, I can tell he's just shaking for a loop. And I was like, "Yeah, we thought it'd be fun to sneak up here and surprise you. I'm coming to your book launch tonight." And he was just overjoyed. And it took him a minute to think. But he's like, "Man, let's go down to the bookshop. I got somebody I want you to meet." And he takes me down to meet Davey Peterson, the guy that owns the bookshop, who's a wildly interesting dude, very well read. And that's when I started getting intimidating, because I realized all of Alex's friends are like literary people. They're all very smart. They're all very college education. These are people that traffic and live in books, traffic and live in writing. And I started getting a little nervous about that party. Like, "Oh, I'm about to be in a room full of a whole bunch of people smarter than me." And I started getting nervous about it. And then Adam tells me, he goes, "Hey, one of my authors is going to do a reading, ain't showing up. I'd love for you to, you know, do 3 or 4 minutes, speak at my book launch party." I was like, "Oh, shit. That's, now I'm real nervous. I just want to come support the guy, you know, want to be a part of his big day. He's a part of a big thing happening for me right now, and it's all because of his involvement." And he takes me back over to his house, where I get to meet Lauren in person, and Lauren's mom, I think it's Cynthia. I hope it's Cynthia. She's delightful, and I get to meet their young daughter, Ever. And she's a delight, too. It's been a while. My kid's never been... It's been a while being around a little baby like that, you know, and I just adore kiddos. And we have a good time getting to know each other, hanging out at their house. And it was funny because Adam often makes a joke that he's ADHD, and that both of our wives are wranglers of ADHD men. And Lauren at some point says, "Hey, let's do some game planning." And she comes and sits down beside him. And it made me laugh because it's the same type of shit Rachel does to focus my attention, to help me go, "Hey, we gotta work on the plan here. We gotta do some planning." It just tickled me. And I was already like, "I need to make my exit. They need to get ready for the book launch party. I need to go back to the motel, get the hotel, get a little rest, get dressed for the party." So I start making my way. We chat a little bit more, and I start making my way out the door. And they've got a lovely little house. It's not even a little, it's bigger than my house. It's a lovely house, though, and it's just all real wood inside. And like down here, we'd call it a craftsman home. I don't know what you'd call it up there, but it's just gorgeous. Her dad's done a bunch of work on it, and it's got these badass little windows. He's like, laced, I call it lace, but they're lattice work window. They're just gorgeous. It's just a gorgeous little home. Gorgeous home. Stop saying little. That's just one of my descriptors. I make my way out the car, start heading back to the hotel. Lo and behold, I called Rachel. She goes, "Well, read that text when you get back." I get back to the hotel, and it's Rachel basically telling me, "Hey, you need to get out of their hair and let them get ready for the party. You need to go get ready." I was being wrangled too. I just didn't know it yet. Go back to the hotel, take a little nap. I'm real nervous. I write a short little thing for Adam in my head. I put something together, things I can say. I just mostly want to say some nice things about my friend, and I'm excited about his book. And
kind of want to see what a book launch is like, because I'm going to be having one at some point. And his was awesome. I get there, and it's without a doubt a interesting collection of people. It's people who have known Adam his whole life, and also a number of authors and people who live in traffic and books and the written word. And I was feeling real intimidated. I was just kind of hovering around the back because I was kind of nervous. I don't get anxious or nervous before shows, but I got anxious and nervous before this because I get that way sometimes around people I know got more education than me. I'm a little embarrassed of it sometimes. And that's just my insecurity, you know? But I feel like I did a good job speaking for him. I got up there, I made a couple jokes. I told a story about me and him, and then I just said some nice things about my friend, how happy I was to be able to be there to support him, how happy I was about his book. And I met the other author. We all go to a little place in Rockford, a Prairie Brewery or something like that. And I have a drink with him and his friends, but I'm wiped at this point. I've been up since 2:30 a.m. I'm wiped. So I let him know I got to go back to the hotel, talk to Rachel, and realized that my other hotel is back in Chicago at O'Hara, real close to O'Hara over in like Des Plaines area. So the next day, I'm going to drive back to Chicago and check into my hotel there, because you don't kind of try to check in midnight. Sometimes they give you room away. So I get up the next morning, haul ass out to Chicago. Checked in. They let me check in early. They let me check in early in Rockford. They let me check in at 11 a.m. The lady was just full of honey and sweet as hell, and she let me check in early. And then the fella checking me in at the hotel at my Holiday Inn Express there by the airport, he's just as lovely and nice a person as can be. And we have a little chit-chat about all his dogs, and he lets me check in early. I'm having a charmed trip as far as travel goes. I decided I'm going to do, I was looking up stuff and places, and I couldn't find any evidence that Crowbar existed or that, which doesn't surprise me. Nightclubs don't generally have long lifespans, and I sort of assumed most of the places I knew in southeast Chicago. I looked on the map, I couldn't find any of the foundries, so I suspect a lot of them are closed down, boarded up, and gone. So I just decided to do tourist stuff. I went downtown Chicago. I went over to the lake, and I went and saw that giant bean thing and the Cloud Gate. We have one like it in Houston. It's called Cloud Column. That thing made me a little uneasy, I'll be honest with you. I know art's supposed to make you feel some kind of way, and I tried to go. I did eat a gummy before I went over there, and was, boy, being close to that giant reflective bean thing kind of made me a little uneasy. Like, you could see all the people behind you snapping pictures and taking things, and it was a weird way to look at that crowd of people I was in. And Chicago's a little different, you know, than I remembered it, but that's the way of the world, you know. Things are constantly changing, but Chicago's always kind of remind me a little bit of Houston. It's got a lot of diverse food. And the traffic's very similar to Houston. You know, it's one of those places that's thoughts and prayers and good luck when you get on the freeway. Well, I'm used to battlegrounds. I'm good at driving in that. That's it's not like going to San Antonio where nobody has any sense of urgency whatsoever. It's like, you know, Chicago's a fast pace. It's a little faster pace than Houston. Walking around. I walked around downtown and sort of took in some of the sights and talked to a homeless fella for a while he fed some pigeons. And just sort of did touristy stuff, you know. Took some pictures of some cool buildings, some cool old buildings, and walked around, took in the sights and smells. I didn't walk around a long time because when I got there, I found out the parking was like $70 for all day parking. I was like, you gotta be out of your mind. Like, I ain't never heard no shit like this in Latin. $70 to park somewhere?
My God. Well, you could get about an hour and a half for $35, and I guarantee you Papa Longmire still turned in his grave about me spending $35 to park a car somewhere, but by God, there ain't no cheap parking in Chicago. Let me tell you that. I did not remember that about Chicago. If I spend time down there exploring, I drive over to Lincoln Park, walk around a little bit, and just seen some stuff, and slowly fought traffic back to O'Hara. Got looking for some food and found this little joint over there by the airport called Charcoal Delights. This little bitty old mom and pop burger shop, chicken and burger shop. They cook everything over charcoal. And I said, boy, that sounds pretty good. I went there. Old Greek fella owns the place, and he was just a delight. I had a good time chatting with him and talking to him about traveling and such, and made me a damn fine charcoal burger. The fries weren't bad either. It was a nice little meal. And went back over to my hotel room, rested a little bit, made some notes. I haven't done that wrecking yard material in a long time, and I had different ideas on how to transition some of it, different bits I wanted to do from the special. And you know, there's a story in that first special it's a story about the time my father-in-law gave me an Adderall and the chaos that ensued. And when I told that story in the special, it was only the second time I'd ever told that story on stage. And I had so many better ideas later on about how to wrap up that bit and how to do that bit. And so I kind of got excited about getting the opportunity to perform that material again to a good chunk of people. Had you seen, I think we were at 80 or 90 tickets sold by that point. I couldn't believe all these people was driving to a basketball court to see me out in the middle of nowhere in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Just I had the craziest. I walk out. So my hotel is surrounded by concrete. It's just concrete. It's a concrete jungle there. And I walk out to go get my car, and this little rabbit peeks his head out. Look like a little field rabbit peeks his head out from under the front of my car. And he looked at me more with curiosity than fear. Not like you see a rabbit here, that booger would dart. This booger just looked at me. And then he very slowly, I can't even call it hopping, just moving his front legs ahead, then his back leg. You ever seen a rabbit move slow like they don't give a damn? This rabbit moves slow. You can't call it walking, you can't call it hobbling, but maybe cantering. Maybe the rabbit cantered. Over to this little bitty strip of median where the trash can was, and there was some grass there. And that rabbit sat beside that trash can and started eating that grass, and eyeing me with that same curiosity he had displayed when he poked his head out from underneath the car, as if I didn't matter. I was just a curiosity for him to look at for a little while, but no worries. I took it as a good sign. I figured, you know, a rabbit's foot is supposed to be good luck. I mean, not for the rabbit, but a rabbit's foot's supposed to be good luck. Man, a whole rabbit's got to be some damn good luck. And I got in the car. I drove out. I called Rachel to tell her about that rabbit because it made me laugh. I drove out to Crystal Lake, about an hour, where my hotel was, about 45 minutes, really. And I worked out. I talked to Rachel almost all the way there, which usually on the drive to shows when I kind of work out the details of what I'm going to do. I get there and park and walk around, and find Adam. Adam and his family's already there. Well, Adam and Lauren and some friends of theirs that name escapes me. They're there. Jeff. Couldn't remember that guy's name. He's bugging me. He's a good dude. Jeff and his gal are there. And I said, Adam, man, we've concocted. So after Adam had me perform at the bookstore, seeing Adam at the bookstore, I should have told y'all about this. He did some readings from his book, man, and I don't get to see that Adam. The Adam I talked to on the phone is the guy we're going through editing stuff, and there's a lot of and we're
we're figuring out ideas and stuff, and we're working on something in tandem. Adam behind the mic is a different dude. Adam behind the mic is expressive. I just thought Joe Cocker, jazz poet. This guy is a monster behind the mic. And I enjoyed watching him at the book launch party do his readings, and he hosted the whole thing. And he's got the thing, man, whatever it is, the ability to be on stage and hold a crowd as a captive audience, he's got it. So Rachel said, we should ask him to bring you on stage at the show, because basically that whole show was planned around him. So that sounds excellent. So me and Adam, we meet up, we go off in there, we meet the guy that's putting the show together, Mike. He's fantastic. People always worry, like, oh, I don't have much of a green room. Like, all I need for a green room is a quiet place. I just need a quiet place, maybe a chair to sit in, some water, go through my notes, get ready for the show. I have little rituals I do before I prep, before I go on stage. And he takes us to the Ninja Training Room. It's an indoor sports complex. They have this room called the Ninja Training Room, and there's these weird green rectangles with holes cut in them hanging from this apparatus and stuff you got to crawl under on the floor. I suspect you got to do ninja shit to get through it. Me and Adam put our heads together. Neither one of us had an answer for how to get through it. But if I bring somebody in my green room, they were, well, it's not very luxurious. I don't need luxurious, just need a nice quiet place. And they provide me with that. There's a little table there, we sit down. I've brought Adam into the green room with me. I'm real careful about who I invite in the green room. So when I invite somebody in the green room to commune with me before the show, it's somebody I don't worry about taxing my energy. I like doing meet and greets after the show because it takes a lot of energy. I don't like to do them before the show as often because it's taxing and it takes some energy that I want to save for the show. So if I invite somebody into my green room, it's somebody I know it's not going to tax me energy-wise. Somebody that, you know, is probably okay to sit in silence a little bit. We chit-chat a little bit about Adam's going to go up for a few minutes, talk to the crowd, maybe tell them a story about how he met me, that kind of thing, and then he's going to bring me up. And to get on the stage, we got to walk back around the indoor soccer area, and they've hung a curtain up halfway. Well, it's like a big vinyl sort of thing behind the basketball goal where the goals come down from the ceiling. There's this big vinyl sort of thing that cuts off half the gym from the other half, and we come in from behind that. So I sit there and I work out a few notes about the show and chit chat with Adam a little bit. And then the other guy comes. He says, "Hey man, we're ready to start the show." Said, "Only thing is, only about 70 people have showed up. We don't know where the other 30 people are, but we've already held the show up 10-15 minutes. I can't hold it up much longer." I said, "Well, let's just run it and hope they show up." And they did at some point, because I realized about halfway through my set that they're all there, or at least a good deal of the people that have bought tickets have shown up. And Adam goes on stage. I can't really hear what he's saying. I'm back there behind the curtain waiting to go on stage. And I can't hear him very good, but there gets this one point where there's quiet and he says something about me. And the crowd doesn't laugh because they maybe don't know me well enough yet to understand the joke, but I guffawed. From behind that curtain, it elicited a guffaw from me, a big old loud hearty chuckle. And when I laughed, they realize I'm back there behind the curtain and the whole crowd laughs. And I was like, "Oh, it's perfect." Adam brings me on stage. I go up. A wonderful applause. Talk about Adam a little bit and launch into the wrecking yard. And it felt fun walking through that old material again. I got lost a couple times trying to skip the beat, trying to remember. But the crowd's into it. We're having a good time. And I get on going through that. I was going to do a 30-minute version of the wrecking yard, but I look down, it's 45 minutes in. And they're having time in their life. I still got to close the wrecking yard out and switch gears and jump into the tip point. I still ain't figured out how I'm going to do that, what that transition's going to look like. Well, the great thing is that bit that I've written about Adam and writing the book,
it fits perfectly between those two. And I wrap up the wrecking yard and I do that bit, and it sort of triggers them into the next thing, and I go into the tipping point and have a ball. But I did a version of that Adderall bit that I've never done before, talking about my father-in-law, and it hit so hard, and it made me so sad that it's not on that special that way, because I done it better than I ever done before. That crowd's electric. They're alive. They're in the know. They're there to have a good time. And we rock for 2 hours. I did not mean to keep them people there that long, but God dang it, they were just infectious and wonderful. And we rocked that thing for about 2 hours and 10 minutes, and I closed it with a story that I only tell live. And if you've been to a live show, you know what I mean when I say the College Station story. But I don't ever put that story, that story's never going in a special, it's never going on video. It's just a story that when the crowd is right, I'm feeling it, I like to tell it. And I close that story, and it closes big, and I go around the back, get a drink of water, go around to the back to set up my stickers and sell some merchandise. Got my Diamond Gym certified stickers with me. And just a handful of people, I could tell they were on their way out, but they were excited to see me while I was walking up, shook my hand. But I could tell I'd kept them up past their bedtime. They were folks, they were just, you know, I'd kept them up a little late, and I don't blame them, but they were excited to see me and shake my hand and talk to me. And by God, the rest of the people on that basketball court lined up. And it was this cool moment. I just like, hey, man, I know we all been here a long time. Please be patient with me. But I want to talk to everybody, and I want to get a picture with everybody. And everybody was so cool, man. It was so harmonious, man. Folks just started taking pictures for each other, and it was just a cool vibe, man. And people would walk up, and I'd get to talk to them a little bit. And I met once again, a bunch of fans from the Wrecking Yard, a bunch of fans from this podcast there. A lot of truck astrology guys. A guy named Jeff that I talk to on Facebook all the time. He's come from Michigan, I think. People have come from Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin. A couple's come from Madison, Wisconsin. People have come from Indiana. People have come from all over the place. It was a good area for people to be able to reach. Some people have driven up from South Illinois and got hotels in the area. And it's just a cool vibe, man. And I was exhausted after that show, but those people gave me life, and I enjoyed talking to them. And I got to meet another dude who's a shop teacher who's been listening for a long time. I can't remember his name right off the bat. Everybody there was interesting. A longtime fan on Facebook named Lacey was there with her friend. They drove down to see me and met one of y'all, one of you guys that have been around for a while, day one-er, I think, named Jake. His handle's like Master of All Things, something like that. I've read several of his comments before, but one of the first interactions I ever had with Jake, I think, was over on Facebook, or it may have been on YouTube, but it was about my mom's Volkswagen Bug, and while a lot of people were telling me that car's too far gone to do anything with, old Jake popped in. And he's like, here's what you do. And he told me how to straighten that car out with a power bar and he's like, you get a door and a windshield in it, you got a car. And he gave me hope for the car. Ideas that I still plan to use. And they were all meticulous, well thought out ideas on how to straighten that car out. But then the screen name at the time was like Smurfette something. And I was like, oh, well, this lady knows her way around a Volkswagen. And so and we had found out the confusion later. He was on his wife's account or something, her screen name. And I've talked to him several times in the course of the podcast. And he brought me a bunch of Hot Wheels. I don't have them out here right now. I got my new packages out here. But he brought me a bunch of Hot Wheels for the Driven Dreams organization. And everybody was buying stickers. I made some good money on merchandise, selling stickers that week, and that always helps out with the extra costs and stuff associated with traveling. And signed a bunch of stickers for people. People from Ireland there. I mean, it was just a vibe, man. But meeting Jake was cool. Jake came up and explained to himself
and this pink-haired, shorter lady beside him, was a little shorter than him, come up, and he said, "This is Smurfette." And Smurfette's cool as shit, too. And I always ask the women if they have a good time at my show, because I in the early days, women would come at me after the show and they go, "I was so worried you're going to talk about trucks the whole time." And I knew their husbands had drug them to this comedy show, and I was like, no. So I always want to make sure that the gals that get drugged to my show have a good time, and they all were. In fact, I do a funny little joke about my tattoo and about how you should do a thorough audit of all the jobs a body part does before you put a memorial tattoo on it. And this gal comes up the line. She goes, "I know exactly what you mean about tattoo. My father passed when I was a teenager, and she had daddy's little girl tattooed on her, up here on her, like the back of her shoulder." And she goes, "It's been a source of constant conversation throughout my dating life." And I was like, "I bet it has." You know? Of course, Adam and Lauren hang out. Adam brings me an autographed copy of his book that I asked for, that my wife has demanded I get before I return home. And I'm excited about that. And I said my goodbyes. I've had a wonderful time hanging out with my new friend. Enjoyed meeting his wife and his kid. And I've met his mom. His mom was at the book launch party. I just adore his mother. She's wonderful. One of these days, I'm going to get him to tell me all the stories about his father, because his father has an Uncle Bobby-esque vibe, and I'm just dying to know more about the man. I'm a live wire after that show. I should be exhausted. It's midnight in Crystal Lake. I got to drive back to Chicago. And I'm on the phone with Rachel all the way back. Like, we don't even need comedy clubs. Like, it never dawned on me that the comedy clubs might need me more than I need them. Like, I don't need to put up with all the crap. If I can find a venue, I can book a show anywhere and give people a good quality show. And I was a live wire from doing them two shows back to back with that kind of response. And I talked to Rachel all the way back to Chicago, and I went and tried to find some food, late night food in Chicago, and damned if everything I drove to wasn't closed. So I just said, screw it. I went back to the hotel. I had to get up 4 in the morning to catch my flight back to Houston. Took the early flights, trying to be economical. Adam had brought me a joint called Big Dog. I didn't know weed was legal in Illinois until I got there, and he had brought me this really good joint and took that opportunity in the parking lot when I got back from Crystal Lake. Go out there and smoke that big old stick out there in the parking lot, talk to Rachel, and he'd give me another little smaller one, and I smoked that one too. Went in there and went to bed, got up next morning, dropped my rental car off before dark, made my way through the O'Hara airport, got fondled and groped up again by a much nicer TSA agent this time, and was much more pleasant about it. And got on my flight back to Houston. Made it back home with another adventure in my belt. I didn't run across no echoes of 20-year-old me, but I sure left some new ones. Let's do some testimonials, if you will. And I know I got them all right here because I put all this together today. Let's see what we got here. I don't remember which ones I picked, but we'll figure it out. Our old buddy Chuck Packwood. "I love listening to the love." These are testimonials from last week's episode. Quite a bit of it was about my father-in-law. "I love listening to the love and respect you both have for your father-in-law. It was great to hear her speak love on her dad." Yeah, that was a new thing we done where Rachel recorded something. I recorded Rachel speaking about her dad, and I played it during the podcast, and I enjoyed doing that. And I feel like it touched a lot of people. I remember
Amy Iris, our good friend Amy Iris. If you, I don't know if you do prayers or positive thoughts, whatever you do, Amy Iris has been having a little, having a rough go of it lately. And so if you spare some kindness in your heart towards another day oneer, the one that made my shirt, Amy Iris, you spare some kind thoughts towards her. I think she could use a little pick-me-up from the wrecking yard. Going through a rough time. Thank you for sending that, Chuck. I loved hearing Rachel speak on her father as well. I love it whenever she wants to be involved with this thing. She does so much behind the scenes, like y'all would never know the full extent of that woman's powers. But everything that is good in my life is a result of her touch on it somewhere. At David Beckert, I know you like great writers like Faulkner and others, as do I. What reading grade level will your book be written? Zane Grey and most of the writers of today write at a third grade level. I would like to read a book at a higher level. Love you, man. Onward and upward, no limits. Well, David, this book's a memoir, and I want it to be accessible to a lot of people, but if I had to guess at it, I don't know how to do all those scales and stuff, but if I had to guess, I'd say it's probably going to be about a 9th, 10th grade reading level. Because I want it to be accessible to a good deal of people. And there may be books at higher reading levels later on, there may not, but that's about what this one's run. That's a good question. Had our old buddy Texasipian. JW, I've been here since day one. And this is a top three episode for me. My wife doesn't know who her father is and never had a stepfather, etc. So I have missed having a father-in-law. But more importantly, my wife will never have what your wife had. I celebrate what the two of you had with Ken. Also, regarding the testimonial where you replied, a lot of stories ain't about cars. This podcast is about cars, the way Field of Dreams is a baseball movie. Cars are quite literally the vessel used to tell a better story. I barely know the difference between an alternator and a carburetor, but we all have an Uncle Bobby, etc. I quote you regularly, and may shock you on the quote I use. Parenting is so hard because you only get to do it once. JWL. Did I say that? I probably did. That sounds like some shit I'd say. Yesterday, I had to have a hard conversation with my 15-year-old son. We both cried, and I most recently shared that quote with him. Sorry for the lengthy comment. Never be sorry for a lengthy comment. We love you. Man, I love you too, Jeff. Texas, Scipion, whatever your name is. That's funny. That's an interesting quote. Sounds like something I'd say, though. I'm always surprised at what people take away from what I have to say. Funny you say that, though. I didn't get the chance till I got home till yesterday to sit down and read Adam's book. It's called More Hell. It's a collection of short stories, 15 short stories he's written. And it's my benchmark for a book is if I can forget I'm reading it. If I just pick up a book and I don't put it down till I'm done, then that's my benchmark for my favorites. And there's a handful of books throughout the years that have been that way for me. Rebuilding the Indian was that way. I think I read that book in 2 days. I read Adam's book in about probably 3 or 4 hours. I couldn't put it down. I thumbed through it. We'd drive to the kids' music performance, and I finished reading it on the way there, right when we got up to the school. And it ain't like some, he writes about the Midwest, but it ain't some Norman Rockwell painting. And it's sad, but it ain't a sad country song either. These are real folks cussing and stumbling, holding on by, you know, duct tape and a prayer. Every so often, one of them lights themselves up some way, like a bottle rocket in a cow pasture, and you can't look away. It ain't the backdrop of the book that stays with you. It's the people, the people he describes in these stories. It's just souls raising hell just to prove they're alive. And I deeply enjoyed it. And I get to the end, and I'm reading his acknowledgments. not expecting to find myself in there. Just, he's a clever writer. I want to see what he has to say about people. And it's very clever. And I get to the end of his acknowledgments, and lo and behold, I couldn't be more surprised to see one of my quotes there. He says, just like, and like my friend Jerry Wayne Longmire says, there's nothing more important than you can give somebody than your time. And I looked to the left and noticed Rachel was watching. She knew I was at the end. She'd already read the book. She was watching. She couldn't wait she knew about this already. And I'm sure I grinned at her and at my trademark half-split mouth grin, you know, like I was so shocked. And then later it made me laugh in a dark way. It made me laugh in a dark way because that quote is a quote that my father has said to me very many times in my life. That's something my dad has said to me very many times. You know, the most important thing you can give people is your time. And it made me laugh that somebody got that quote from me that I got from my father, who very rarely gives me his time. It was just kind of a weird cluster of stuff that made me laugh. I laugh at dark things, and it tickled me. I laughed. I was like, the guy gave me the quote that doesn't give me his time, actually, is who taught me that quote that I believe in, and I try to give people my time. I'm very pleased to be sharing some of my time with Adam. I'm thankful that the universe put the wrecking yard and me in his path. I suspect Adam's going to do a great many great things in the future. He's a very talented writer and a very, very intelligent man. And I'm pleased to call him my friend. And we got some unboxing to do. I got some packages at the P.O. box this week. So let's get into that. And then we'll wrap this thing up and we'll get out of here. How's that grab you? Sounds like a plan to me. My air conditioner's not working very good tonight. It's a little warm in the garage. Ooh. Boom. Look at that, another 50 pack of Hot Wheels. I just counted them all up. I had a little contest. Count them all up, had people guess how many I got, but we got like 670 Hot Wheels, plus with the ones that Jake brought me, that put it up to like 690, and then that, God, I'm not good at math, I think this puts us about 740 Hot Wheels, 740 smiles we're going to put on some kids' faces come October and Day of Giving for the DrivenDreams.org. charity, and I couldn't be more tickled about this. Let's see who sent it to me. Please let there be a note. There's usually a note. Love your content, keep bringing the ha-ha from Wayne Havens. Oh, that's my Wayne Havens, dude. Used to be stand-up comic, man. We were in the same scene at the same time together. He's a really cool dude. He's a badass old mechanic, and he's come out in my punchline shows and supported me. And thank you, Wayne. This is awesome. Thank you, bro. I really appreciate it. We got one more here. Let's see what we got. The old knife of freedom here. We the people. It's very patriotic and such. Somebody sent me a box of knives to check out and review, and that was the one I kept because I really liked it. Holy shit. And there we go. Another 50 pack. Another 50 pack. What's that? 740? We're at 790. We almost 800 smiles, baby. Almost 800 smiles. Look at that. Another big ass 50 pack. My God. Dadgummit. God bless, I love y'all. This is just the most beautiful thing I've ever been a part of, and I'm just so thankful that y'all have joined it. Look at that, buddy. We almost 800 smiles, man. That's work right there. Come on, be a note in here. From Luke Deemer and the 182 Garage LLC. We love the show. Keep up the good work. From Stephen Deemer, Dimer. I hope I'm saying that wrong. Luke's dad. Hey, you know what? Thank you. Thank y'all for watching and being a part of this. Thank you so much, man. I love y'all. We're going to do a lot of good this October, and I couldn't be more tickled about it. Y'all really moved me when y'all do stuff like that. It's just such a magnanimous, cool thing. Let's wrap this thing up. And like I said, stick around after the close of the show if you want to watch that little video. It'll be there. There's something healing in what we done here, me and y'all. I knew it when I got to Kilgore, when I got to Sexton Road, when I got to the wrecking yard. I've kept my history locked in a box labeled anger for a long time. Anger was easy for me. You can pick it up, swing it, or shove it back in the box. But the thing that nobody tells you is when anger finally runs out of strength or you beat it, what's left standing behind it is sadness. And sadness don't fit no box. It won't be locked away. You got to deal with it, the root of it, the why of it. It'll just eat you alive otherwise. Anger, sometimes you can lock away in a box. And I found out what I was sad for once the anger wasn't there to guard me anymore. I had to face the truth. And the hard truth is that I've lost pieces of myself. My mother, my granny, the wrecking yard. There's pieces of me that are gone forever now. You've got your own things too, things you've hidden under anger for a long time. And maybe one day when anger finally lets go, you'll see them better. I ain't fully at peace with my sadness. I'm about 50%. Like my buddy Sam Miller says, you know, 50% is pretty good. The rest I'll grieve as I keep on with the mission. That's the hard part of healing. But knowing the anger's gone, that makes it lighter somehow. Easier. So if your anger fades one day, I hope these words linger enough to help. I'm rooting for you. I'll never quit rooting for you. There's room at the table for all of us. And we can always add leaves in when new folks show up. That's how it works in family. That's how it worked in the yard too. Nothing too far gone, nothing too broke, just waiting for a little redemption. Wrecking Yard is a place for phoenixes. It's a place for you. It's a place for me. I'm JW. I love you. There are 800 cars. Good God Almighty. Boy, I feel like I'm I'm about to open a toy store. That's boy. Love y'all.
Filming this for you, Adam. I am driving in on Sexton Road. That's the Livers Chapel Water Tower up there ahead. And right over here to the right, this was all Curly Taylor's pasture back in the day in Avalon Street. And right about right there was a little cattle pond. It looks like it's broken now. That was a little cattle pond I used to go fishing in. And this is the big hill I would talk about. Used to be back in the day when you looked right through there, you could see the whole wrecking yard laid out before you. These trees weren't that big back then. That's the little creek. Me and my friend Nathan played. This used to be the cattle guard. Right there, off to the left, is where Aunt Tanya ran her Trans Am off the ditch. Okay, so that little house right there, that was Uncle Bobby's house. That's where Uncle Bobby and Aunt Tanya and that little road right there used to be called Sherry K. Lane. We went down to Granny's house down at the end there. This was all wrecking yard.
but still memories buried.
And there's, oh shit, there's Papa Shop. There's Papa Shop back there. And then this is the little piece of land where I live. What used to be a firehouse.
Are you really digging for peace? Or is that just a lie? Tell her, help you sleep.